Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segreto, and this is Franchise Today. Today, my special guest is Rhonda Sanderson, President, CEO, and founder at Sanderson & Associates, a longtime PR firm specializing in franchise PR. Rhonda and I will be discussing integrating social media into current PR programs. It should be a discussion that everyone in franchising needs to listen to with both ears. I'd like to take a moment and thank BJ Emerson, the social technology officer at Tasty Delight, for being my guest last week as we discussed social opportunities for multi-unit operators. Despite the Easter and Passover holidays, our live and on-demand listeners were our second highest number yet. So if you have yet to listen to last week's show or any Franchise Today show for that matter, all segments are available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Thanks again, BJ. I have to say you really taught me a few things, and I was really intrigued by Foursquare. Next week, Scott Lair of the IFA will be my guest as we discuss the International Franchise Expo in Washington, D.C. By then, the IFE event, which runs this Friday and into the weekend, will be behind us, so Scott will be able to provide us with some insight into the goings-on at that event. Of course, we'll also take some time to talk about the IFA and pending management change as a result of Matt Shea's resignation. So please be sure to tune in next Thursday at this same bat time, same bat station. As I mentioned last week, starting in late April and continuing well into May, we're planning a legal series for Franchise Today. Our plans are to discuss franchise performance representations, franchise advisory councils, and other pertinent topics. The lineup of guests is still being planned out, so we welcome requests from franchise attorneys and consultants that may be interested in participating. Please be sure to contact me at paulsegreto@fmdpro.com. Well, what with Easter and Passover holidays and so many franchise executives spending time with their lovely families on spring break, action within the LinkedIn groups has slowed to a trickle. So let's take a look at the franchise blog community, and lo and behold, there's the definitive blog of the franchise world, none other than Sanderson & Associates Daily Franchise News Blog. It's a really great blog about the goings-on within franchising today, and Rhonda's team does a great job day in and day out. But yesterday's post really caught my eye because it focused on a new franchise concept, utilizing new technology to stand out from the crowd. And it goes on to say, fulfilling the craving of an organic grass-fed burger with fresh fries cooked in olive oil. Boy, us Italians love olive oil. It has never been so easy. Elevation Burger, an Arlington, Virginia-based organic burger concept, just unveiled a new iPhone application that's compatible with iPhone, iPod Touch, and even the new iPad, which allows guests to order their favorite menu items with the tap of a finger. The Elevation Burger application is similar to ordering at the restaurant. Once users have chosen their preferred restaurant location on their iPhone, they can scroll the menu and decide what items sound most appealing. Ordering is especially simple since the application includes food descriptions as well as photos. Yes, it's even visual. Once the Elevation Burger order is finalized, the application displays the total cost, and users pay with their credit card and determine the pickup time, which can be in as little as 5 minutes. When guests arrive at Elevation Burger, they can bypass the line and quickly grab their food. The iPhone app offers people a convenient way of getting Elevation Burger, and it's a fun and interactive way of communicating with our guests, so says Hans Hess, Elevation Burger founder and CEO. The iPhone app also makes eating delicious organic burgers even easier. Well, congrats to the team at Sanderson Associates. Your blog really rocks, and I think that really did a great job of showing us how technology and a good concept can be brought to light. Speaking of Sanderson & Associates, Today's guest probably needs little introduction to all that have made franchising their career and passion for the past 25 years. Rhonda Sanderson, chair of the IFA Supplier Forum in 2002, began her career in public relations in 1981, working for a small Chicago PR firm. While there, she and three others developed a system to help franchisors grow and then applied it to Subway, Hair Performers, and many others. In 85, she left that firm and founded Sanderson & Associates. Since then, she and her staff have helped grow hundreds of franchise systems such as Molly Made, Service Master, Hardee's, Smoothie King, Garage Tech, Comfort Keepers, Meineke Discount Muffler, Sparrow Italian Eatery, The Counter, Postnet, and Juice Club, known today as Jamba Juice, a name change that took place after an L.A. Times story placed by Sanderson & Associates led Starbucks, yes, you heard that right, Starbucks, to invest $49 million in the company. Choosing to keep this a small boutique firm, Rhonda feels she can better service a short list of select clients with a wonderful staff of 16. The company currently represents 52 franchise systems and hundreds of their franchisees. Rhonda, welcome to Franchise Today.
Well, thank you, Paul. I must say, I could not imagine a better radio voice. Were you born with that, or that got developed, or what happened?
I think it's a combination of both. I have to try to get that old New York accent.
Like that New York accent. No, it's very small. It's not, you know, soprano-like. It's wonderful. And it's great to be on. It's great to also have dialogue, frankly, with, you know, another professional who's been around in this industry as long as I have. I would sometimes say they're far and few between, but they're not. I mean, I run into people who, you know, I saw maybe at the first few IFA conventions, and we make jokes about there are 400 people at the time, you know, as opposed to the 3,000. We'd all be at the pool in the afternoons. There weren't sessions all the time. It was just kind of a schmooze fest and a few things. And we can't decide, you know, which was more fun then or now, but certainly a lot of people are getting a lot more out of the conventions now.
Sure, yes, and as you said, they're certainly not few and far between as far as the professionals, but it is amazing how much the event has grown.
Yeah.
This year's event was my first in many years. And you and I were both there and never ran into each other.
Oh, that's easy to do. Very frequently now, I don't see people for the whole event. 1983 was my first convention. I don't know if I should be ashamed to say that, but not only has it grown wonderfully, I mean, I credit Debbie Moss, and I don't care who hears it. Debbie Moss of the IFA is just tremendous. She puts this whole thing together with her team, who they adore her. And, you know, she's a crackerjack, efficient, alpha female who really has this down pat, this whole process. And it's grown and grown. Sometimes when things grow, they get kind of out of control and not good. But I have to say it's been quite the opposite. People are
They really put on a fabulous convention this year.
And it's timed beautifully, you know what I mean? It runs smoothly, and that's hard when something's that big.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say you don't care who hears you say
Well,
that?
You know, I shouldn't say that, but I'll tell you. Sometimes when you give kudos to someone in a, you know, in somewhere like the IFA, you know, other people, you know how it is. I'm giving credit where I think it's due. I love Scott Lehrer, and I love Matt Shea. I mean, I will miss him terribly. And they all do fabulous jobs. But sometimes I feel bad because I feel like there's the people that really work their butts off, like Debbie, they don't get enough credit, or it's not verbalized enough out by
Absolutely.
Us franchise people. Yeah.
They do a lot of work behind the scenes. There's so much
Amazing.
That needs to be done and coordinated and scheduled mm-hmm. and then executed. And it was, at least looking from the outside in, was without fail. It was just fabulous. But, you know, I was referring more to you being outspoken.
Oh, well, you know me. I'm very well known for that, and I'm sure it rubs some people the wrong way, but here's my theory on that. It's not so much that I'm outspoken as much as I'm honest. I'm the kind of PR woman, there's PR firms out there right now, whether they be in franchising or just in the old corporate world, that, you know, the client kind of runs the account, and that really does the client no good. So sometimes a client will say to me, I want this release put in somewhere, and I say, listen, you're the client. Let me look at it. But if I know that he's made this or she's made this a very advertising or marketing piece, A, it does one of two things, and this goes along with what is a traditional PR program, and let's get into that. If that piece is too salesy or marketing written, you know what, and what I mean by that is, we're the biggest, we're the best, this is the greatest thing that ever happened, we built the biggest widget, you know, that the whole world needs, and we just don't know why, but believe me, they do. You know, that type of a release is scorned upon by the press. And probably just deleted or in my old day just crumpled into a ball. I mean, I started out and we were typing our pitch letters, and I don't know if I should be embarrassed to say this, but we got an IBM Selectric in the office, and it memorized 9 letters, and we all were like aghast. I mean, that, but I don't feel too badly because, you know, like Future Shock, the book, what should have taken 100 years to take place has only taken 20, and so we've had this tremendous, obviously, as everyone knows, this technological surge, and ironically, it's been a big plus, but there's parts of it that are a big minus in our industry anyway.
Right.
I'll get to that in a little bit, but
absolutely.
You know, the problem with putting out a very marketing or new or press release that's not, you know, shall we say, news. The problem with that is, you lose respect. You lose the respect of the press. Okay, you. Not only would my firm lose their respect, and they'd say these people should know better. They're in PR, but even the client who's now said to me, "I want it written this way," they don't want to hear from him anymore either. In other words, the name that's on the release, I don't care if it's, you know, Bob's big dog, they don't want to hear from this guy again. They will put the name with the deed. Let's put it that way. They don't have a lot of time. They have seconds to do everything every day. So you don't want any reporter, producer, blogger, and nowadays anyone putting that deed and that you know, type of thing together with your name, because that's
right.
All they'll remember.
Right.
And so
I know what you're talking about as far as it being too markety. I noticed some that want to try to tell everything. They want, you know, 7 or 8 different, you know, points in there, and they want to write an essay about it. And
well, they're selling.
Like, you know,
The problem is you're selling. In marketing piece, you're selling.
Right. Absolutely.
And you should be. That's what a marketing piece is.
Right. So how is traditional PR evolving and changing? To adapt with some of the new communications that are out there, such as social media?
Mm-hmm. Well, we call it new media, social media. I prefer new media because it's not always social, but there's so many different kinds. So, look, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, 6 or 60. If you are in a profession that you care passionately about, you better be a change-in. And in my case, what we do is I started in 1985 with, you know, 2 or 3 people. I would talk to reporters. My office was never off the phone. Nobody in that office was ever off the phone. I made such great relationships with some of the biggest editors in publications that are no longer there, and there's the key word, Venture Magazine, Success Magazine, Nation's Business, which was the Chamber of Commerce of the United States magazine. These were all top publications. It all had franchise sections, and my clients were in there every month. I mean, there was not even a glitch. But those days, and this is still, here's the key word I want anybody listening, they were about relationships. And that's the thing. You, even though there's new things to do, and I will get into it, everything stems in media or PR to relationships. And that's because you are basically asking someone to trust you implicitly. Their job could be on the line. If you give somebody bad information or a reporter or somebody and you lie to them for your client or even kind of fudge the truth a little bit, you've just put your media contact's job on the line as well. I don't think a lot of people mean to do that or know that and are deliberately doing that to some of their press contacts, but this is why this is very important. I mean, if you don't have relationships with reporters or now bloggers or in social media, it's still about relationships. Otherwise, you're trying to sell a product, and people are extremely aware of that. And also, what it's done is it's changed what we call a monologue into a dialogue. And that means I used to be able to get, and I still do, we still do here, you know, Wall Street Journal stories, fabulous stories in Inc., stories in major newspapers on behalf of the franchisor or the franchisee telling their story. Okay, we still always make the impact about what does their product or service, how does it affect the consumer out there? Because otherwise it is a marketing piece if you're just going, we're the best, we're the biggest, our ice cream's the best. Nobody cares. So we're, you know what I mean, we're still doing that, but in those days it was what we call a monologue. We were just telling our story, and if you had any opinion about that, too bad for you. Great. It was great. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. You know, David Meerman Scott wrote the book, The New
Rules
of
Marketing
and PR. Are they really new rules?
They are. They are. Some of them are. Some of them, what I'm trying to hopefully get other people to do, you know, there's some what I call young upstarts, I like to call them, in franchise PR. And hey, you know what? Everything in this world evolves, and I welcome them. But I think some things they're forgetting is that somebody who's been in the business for 3 years, for example, can say, oh, the old PR doesn't work anymore. Well, yes, it does. You just have to evolve it and add on all the new stuff. You cannot have the experience that somebody of 25 years does as long as they keep up with things. It's just like the medical world. You know, I just read an article, Paul, that said, why you want your doctor to look like he's 12 years old, which I thought was hilarious. But I know, and I want to say, well, they do. But what the article meant was you want the youngest people just getting out of school as your medical team because they know all the latest, you know, techniques and medical care. And this is the same kind of issue that many people don't want the older doctor because he's not kept up on things. Well, in PR, it's kind of the opposite, or it needs to be. You need to be, if you're older, you've got all the experience, and you know franchising. That's the secret. It's not so much PR as knowing PR and franchising, because franchising has a certain message to deliver. If it's delivered wrong, it can really work against you. You know, what we developed back in that little firm was the buzzwords to make people pick up the phone and buy and be interested in buying a franchise. I can't say we – in those days – you know, in those days, my pitch was, hey, they're going the way of McDonald's, and that was news. I mean, you know, this is 25 years ago. What's happened in those 25 years is not only has PR changed, Paul, but franchising has changed, this particular industry, right?
Yes.
And there, it's almost like, you know, it's like a case study or a test. They test a new drug 20 years ago, they start, and they follow the patients, and 20 years later, it's like, uh-oh, that drug made your nose fall off. We're sorry. Well, the same thing. Nobody's had any bad intentions in this, but 20 years later, you've learned a lot. Well, gee, this wasn't the right way to approach this system. Gee, this concept wasn't as good as we thought it was. Gee, Moto Photo, one of my favorite clients in the 90s, loved them. I mean, they were regular photo film. The world changes. Blockbuster, okay? So my secret and what I think is right, and I would tell the young ones doing this, is have some respect for the experience and knowing how to deal with a crisis and many other things that you haven't gotten to yet. But make sure you have the kind of person who also knows the value of the new media and surrounds, learns about it, evolves with it, is ahead of it. And we had the first blog in franchising, as far as I know. I mean, this has been 6 years. So get ahead of it. Surround yourself. My important thing, I have the staff I adore. That I surround myself with sharp, bright, what I call kids. Of course, anybody's a kid next to me. But what I mean is I have, they're from 25 to 35, and my joke in here is I'm firing all of you and hiring a bunch of 14-year-olds because, you know. but the fact is you got to keep on top of it and surround yourself with people who knows where the next cheese is moving to. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, I know. A lot of people in marketing say to me, you know, God, Paul, you're 52 years old. how is it that you know so much about social media? And I said,
and you do, know, actually. Yeah, I'm very impressed with you.
Thank you. It's not so much knowing so much about social media. I there's a lot of people out there that know far more than I do.
Mm-hmm.
How to adapt it and utilize it within franchising, which, of course, is where my experience
exactly.
lies.
Exactly.
And it's just a matter of, you know, looking at the new rules, seeing how it can be integrated with some of the traditional strategies. And I know you're doing a fabulous job doing that as well and evolving the PR aspect at least to integrate some of the social media in there because, I mean, it is an important part of today's community.
No, it's totally. Our favorite way to use it, since, you know, yeah, and I appreciate that, and I've made a big effort in here, but I always have. I always try to be 3 years ahead of everyone else. It's hard to do, but you have to do it. My favorite aspect of social media is not the dialogues, by the way, and I'll get into some of that crisis stuff, but we love to, as you've seen much of, take our stories that we get, say, for today, for example, the Wall Street Journal today features one of our clients, Elevation Burger, the one you just talked about.
Right.
I'm going to take that article and I'm going to tweet it. I'm going to mention it. I'm going to tweet it. I'm going to have it sent to our Facebook page. It's going to be on LinkedIn. That's good for the client. We don't go, oh, this is our story. So we don't really kind of sell ourselves because I don't really think that's a PR firm's job. But
right.
we do sell the client's story. So now, not only is it in traditional print, we go to Tiny URL. I mean, everybody should know that. And we get, you know, we tweet that. We have it everywhere. It's on Dig. So this is the kind of thing that you could really help enhance the audience for the client. Now, BJ Emerson, by the way, who you thanked, he is amazing, is our client as well. Tasty Delight is our client. And it's interesting because how we work with them, BJ, they already had this wonderful internal guy. BJ is not a PR person.
No.
But he's a wonderful tech person.
Right.
And he knows exactly what to do and how to do it. You know, the Foursquare programs, he's way advanced on all that stuff, which for a wonderful product like Tasty Delight that has a cult following, you know, this is the kind of person he was already ensconced there. We were thrilled. We didn't say, oh, we want to take social media over. No, we worked completely together with BJ in every effort there. We get wonderful traditional stories for Tasty Delight. They have, you know, their chair is Jim Amos, who's like one of the Donald Trumps of franchising. I mean, he's just the amazing guy in franchising. And so it's easy for us to get him on Fox News. He's fabulous. He's eloquent. Lots of trade stories. Funny enough, because of BJ's talent there, we just got a big Inc. article on them and the way they're using social media, you know, how innovative they are. So see how that chain works?
Yeah,
you know,
really
and then
well.
BJ, yeah, it's wonderful. So, BJ is one of the, I would say, kind of secrets of this community in that he's just all tasty all day, but he's just this wonderful guy who's very talented and knows what he's doing. We don't want to...
I've learned a lot from him myself,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
and it's really neat talking with somebody that, although he knows, you know, stuff about marketing and stuff, and loves working with the marketing departments, you know, but talking to him from a technological standpoint, he just brings a whole different perspective to how to use this ever-growing array of tools and technology that is just changing every single day. And
mm-hmm.
I too many people, though, run with it from the marketing standpoint.
Well, right. Yeah, like he's what we call social media 3.0, you know, or maybe 2.0 or 1.0. Yeah, I mean, he's the guy that knows every tool, you know, maybe even more than we need to know, but that's right. That's what makes him so interesting, or people like him. That's the thing. He's completely tech, okay? With marketing, here's the deal. Like I said, when you open up a dialogue, when you turn a monologue into a dialogue, here's what happens. Here's the upside. How much better to tweak your own system or to improve your services, your product, whatever, than to get a complete rundown from your customer. I mean, feedback from a customer. a lot of people say, oh, I don't want it. Well, you need it. Believe me, it's going to make your business, it's going to break or make your business.
Absolutely.
On the other hand,
Well, let me interject there a second because, Google came out with real-time search results that are entirely based on social media content and activity.
Uh-huh.
And when you change that monologue into a dialogue, and that's represented in the search results as being, one of the top three or four search results for a company now, I know with mine, sometimes my Twitter search results actually pop ahead of my website.
Mm-hmm.
I
believe that for sure.
And it makes the consumer, the interested party, not only feel like it's an interactive conversation,
right, a
dialogue, but if they want, they can actually stand on the sidelines as if they're standing next to the person interacting through the social media. And it's almost like they're standing next to them observing the conversation. So it gives them an idea not only what they read, but what they quote-unquote hear and how they handle problems, talk with fellow franchisees in the franchise world, talk with candidates, talk to general consumers, share information. You know, it all comes down to that transparency and honesty that you were talking about, and getting in
right
to the journalist, making sure it's honest information.
But
they're
here,
able to on the sidelines and hear it. And I just think that's what the great part of social media is all about.
Yes, and that's the upside is also the downside when you're in the business community. And this is where you say I'm very, open about what I say. Look, we'd all like every bit of feedback to be fabulous, but frequently it's not. And the difference is, in the old days, if a customer had a complaint, they'd write a letter to the company. It would be completely internal, and you'd choose to deal with it or not. You should have chosen to deal with it. If I was your customer service person, I would deal with it. Some companies never did. However, now that complaint letter is going all over the place. Everybody sees it. All your other customers could see it. And so one of the adjustments we've made in our PR is we offer to any one of our clients here, we will manage all of their Facebook, Twitter, sites, YouTube, everything. We upload lots of our TV segments to YouTube. What you have to understand is that these people can say whatever they want to say. We have a case in point going on right now, which, of course, will go nameless. But a franchisee who came up with a site and just that's all they do all day is slam, this company. And between you, me, and the wall, I happen to know these people for many, many years, and they're wonderful people. Can we always find a franchisee who's unhappy somewhere? Are you kidding? In every system. A third, a third, and a third. A third are happy and successful. A third are just doing okay, and that's, okay with them. And a third are not going to be doing very well. That doesn't matter if you have 10 or 10,000 franchises. So, this is the problem. It does present an opportunity for a disgruntled employee. It's the same type of thing to say whatever they want. You are not protected legally at this point. I think one day that's going to change and there's going to be some precedent set.
Right. Absolutely. I agree.
So at some point, that's the downside. I always say that the upside is you can talk to your customer and the downside is you can talk to your customer. So my advice is the oldest PR woman in franchising, or at least the one that's been around the longest, is no matter what or no matter how offended you get, there's nothing you can do. You can't unring the bell. It's there. It's in print. What you can do is deal with it very effectively and right away as soon
right
as you can.
And that's the key. Establish that sense of urgency and do it right away.
But then that's why we manage a lot of our clients' social media pages, because they just don't have the time, unless they wanted to have one person devoted to it. And even so, you have to be careful because there's another thing. It's real easy to hire a young kid, say you're an internal, you're Bob's Ice Cream System and you've got 100 units. So it's real easy for you to hire some kid out of school and say, hey, these kids know everything about social media. I'm just going to let them do everything. Well, they don't know anything about PR, I can tell you.
That's certainly not the case. Especially in franchising, I know some have really gotten themselves in a bad position with inadvertent earnings claims.
Yes, and there's a legal issue for that, absolutely, as you say. Well, I'm going to give you an example, but I'm also not going to name names. This is very recent. Let me interject one more thing here.
You know, when you talk about being the oldest SPO, let's just call it the wisest.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Okay.
Old and wise.
Okay.
But here's the deal. I saw a tweet the other day, and the person will go nameless. She's a very young girl who has just recently started this job. It's a big deal where she's tweeting. I'm not going to, you know, say any more, but a lot of people see it. She tweeted something that the headline was hideous with the little link. Well, I emailed her immediately, and I said, you have to take this tweet down. And I gave her the reasons why, and I said, the headline is horrible. She goes, oh, but there's some things in the article, a couple of good points that I think everybody should see. And I said, they're never going to even get to that point. They're not going to click that. That headline is disastrous. So this is something I know, and it had to do with franchising. And this is something I know because why? Because I've been doing it for 28, 29 years. And I know it rings the bell, you know, and makes people crazy. So you can't, and she's sweet, and she's up on it, and she's tweeting all the time, and she's retweeting, and she knows exactly what she's doing on that end. But she had no idea that this would be offensive to people in this industry.
Right.
So what I'm saying is the combination of knowing, you know, PR or knowing what the public wants or what a franchisee is or what they want. You know, we talk to hundreds of franchisees a week in here. We've heard everything. Oh, my God, I've had one call me on a weekend once crying when he was about to open his store. I mean, he totally had buyer's remorse. And I kind of just had to walk him through the process. It was, you know, it was done. It was a done deal. But, you know, I've dealt with thousands of them over the years. And knowing them and what they feel and, you know, what they need and what you can say to them and what you can't say to people or your customers, what you can do. I'll give you another example. I had a smoothie client that will go nameless, but the product's important. And a lady went in the store, and she got the giant one, like the 16-ounce one or whatever the hell, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And she walked outside and dropped it. It was too big. So she walks back in, and she says to the manager or the franchisee, I dropped my smoothie out there. Can I have another one? He gives her another one, and he charges her another $4. She went crazy on him.
Sure.
Was it his fault she dropped it? No. What did that smoothie cost you, 38 cents to make?
Right, exactly.
You did this to a customer. It's not like, oh, well, if she does it today, she'll do it again every day. Well, no, she won't. That one $3 profit cost you someone that will tell now another 100, 500 people how nasty you are and how much she hates you and will never go in your store.
Right.
Those are the things that you might have to deal with. That scenario wasn't online, but now it can be on Yelp.
Right.
So you need to learn consumer and customer relations, rethink that a little bit. It's not silent anymore. You know,
I think, you know, one of the keys here is understanding franchising. I know there's a lot of upstart PR people, upstart marketers, upstart,
right.
You know, so-called social
mm-hmm.
that have never spent a day working with a franchise client and yet or in a franchise system. And
mm-hmm.
throw themselves out there, and that's all I hear is a regurgitation,
mm-hmm.
very generalized, you know, terms and statements that have nothing to do with franchising. And then the people in franchising, the potential clients looking and say, I could have read that in a book. Give me some real life practical applications. How would this work in a franchise
mm-hmm.
scenario that's so different than a typical B2B or B2C scenario, because you have the different elements and dynamics of the franchise relationship, and a lot of them don't get it. And I've even heard
mm-hmm.
say, and it upsets me, because I am not certainly in PR,
mm-hmm.
although a lot of the work that I do with clients gets them some exposure, but certainly it's not from the standpoint of a PR firm. But it kills me when they say, oh, well, social media is going to replace public relations.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion on that?
Well, I don't think it possibly can. I think what people don't understand is that the view of franchisors, they think it might replace what they've seen as franchise PR. Real PR is an overall campaign. The reason franchisors have traditionally hired PR firms, and I ought to know since I was on the beginning of it, is because they heard Subway, you know, got to 30,000 stores through PR. Well, they did, okay. But you cannot replace what will speak to the public. Social media is a good tool, but no matter how great a tool it is, it can't replace the workshop. PR gives clients a group of people who understand their business, and they've got an honest desire to see them succeed. We know how to navigate media channels and work in the interest of clients. You know what I mean by that? We know what the goal is, or at least if you've been in this as long as I have, I know exactly what the goal is. I know exactly what the buzzwords are to make someone – look, anybody can call a columnist and say, today's my birthday. Can you put it in the column? Look, getting your name in something does not mean your goals are being met.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah,
well, I think a lot of them look at it and they say, oh, well, you know, social media is cheap to do.
Mm-hmm. See if they can sell a franchise on a social media site.
Right.
Now, see, here's my deal. I think it's phenomenal for, I'm thrilled with it for my, especially my restaurant clients, of which my roster is a third. We have Pancheros, who also has an app for the iPhone, Build Your Own Burrito app. It's awesome. This new Elevation Burger app. I'll tell you what else it's great for. If you're, you know, I'll give you guys some tips out there. If you have a food concept, you know, I wouldn't say every city, but there's major markets that have, say, the greatest burger contest, the greatest pizza contest, or, you know, Chicago's number one burger, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, if you're doing it right, you can really use social media to get people to vote for your product.
Right.
That's a great use of social media.
Hey, that's how I got my dog Dolce in the Purina Cutest Dog Contest.
Oh, God. Jeez,
My daughter sent in her registration, and I thought, you know, I wonder how far we can go with this with social media.
Mm-hmm.
And we got through 8.
You were recruited, yeah.
17 of the first 20 rounds, which I was really surprised.
Wow. She must be pretty cute, though.
She is a cute dog, but we set up a Twitter page and a Facebook page.
Oh, wait, that's hilarious. Well,
it's amazing how many people would actually communicate with her online. I mean, I'd go on in the morning to her Twitter page and it'd be like, good morning, Dolce, how are you today? You know, from somebody I had no idea who
they
were.
Yeah, they're in an institution, Paul. I don't want to hurt your feelings. But anyway, no. No, but exactly. I mean, it's really opened the doors. There's no question. Tasty Delight, I cannot tell you how the feedback, you know, via social media. It's amazing about the product, you know, when it opens in a city. Look, we had Taylor Swift tweet that she was so excited that Tasty Delight was coming to Nashville.
That's huge.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. You know, Hungry Girl, the two women behind that whole Hungry Girl series of books and programs and everything, they're fabulous. You have to be a dieter to know who they are, but they're amazing. They love Tasty Delight. They're always, you know, mentioning it in their social networking and their blogs. You know, blogs are one of those things, too. I will warn people. These are some very unusual people. Some of them, you know, do they replace journalists? Can social media replace a traditional PR campaign? Absolutely not, but it should be a part of it, a big part of it nowadays. It should be 35% for sure.
Right.
Okay.
Well, let me get back to the point that I was going to make, is I think a lot of people look at social media and everything surrounding it, and blogs, and these free online PR sites,
mm-hmm.
and they figure, I can save money.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do all this myself, and they think they can save money in doing it and be as effective. And you and I both know that couldn't be further from the truth.
It actually could be disastrous.
Right.
That's the thing. Look, I'm not saying, oh, be careful, every single thing you tweet and say has to be through your PR person. No. But consistent messaging, knowing what makes the bell ring, as I say, you know, there's a difference between seeing what I just said this morning, what I had for breakfast, and sending a message out to the proper media channels that makes somebody pick up a phone and say, even though times are tough right now, I'm going to borrow this money. I'm going to do whatever I have to do because I want to own a Tasty Delight. Or I want to know, you know, I want to own a Serta Propainers. You know, that type of thing, that's it. And you're not going to get that through social media. And I don't care what anyone says because this is too big a deal. This is a life-changing, life-altering thing, buying your own business and investing in your own future. And it's not something you just pick up on Twitter, I can tell you that. Now, great websites, that's a whole other thing. I mean, obviously, that's a whole other show. But right now, I have to say, I don't think that you're going to see, please buy one of these franchises from us on Twitter, and somebody's calling in and sending them a check.
It's like anything else. It's got to be a process.
Exactly.
Integrated with traditional strategies.
Exactly.
Without a doubt, and used to enhance. You mentioned blogs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it true, in your opinion, that today's bloggers are replacing what people refer to as yesterday's journalists?
Well, not at all, because the community, blogging community, first of all, many of them already are journalists that work for traditional sites and started a blog. Many of them are well-written and researched, but many more of them are just simply the opinions of people. You know, I mean, even mom blogs. There's a huge story, a case study done where Dove, you know, a big company, or Johnson & Johnson, someone like that, Johnson & Johnson, I believe, invited, you know, all these mom bloggers to, like, a weekend retreat. And mommy blogs, they wanted, you know, obviously that's what they thought was their audience. But they really didn't do enough research on those women to figure out what they really wanted, which was
right. They
all just had, many of them just had babies. It was a non-child retreat. It was during the same time as Blog Her. I don't know if anybody heard of that, but that's a conference for women bloggers. I mean, they did three or four or five things really wrong, and it cost them a ton of money because they gave like a three-day weekend to these women all together in a group, like a camp or a retreat. Well, bottom line is, these weren't necessarily journalists, these women. In fact, they really aren't. So they came back and blogged like, ha, huh, look at the big corporation. They're so stupid. They didn't even, you know, they didn't even let me bring my baby to this event, and they're trying to get me to influence. So, see, this is the stuff that can backfire.
Sure.
Traditional journalists don't write that way. So you have to be able to differentiate what is a journalistic blog, you know, that's part of the Arizona Republic, for example. You know, the business writer there that we get stories on our clients all the time from, this guy in the Arizona Republic, he also has a blog. You know, his blog doesn't talk about subjective things like, oh, I had ice cream last night and I hated it. You know what I mean? It's a journalistic blog. So you really have to study the blogs that you maybe want to target, where you think that maybe your product belongs. And you better not approach them with a press release, I can tell you that. So are they going to replace journalists? Absolutely never. But is it a new outlet, another media outlet opening that you could possibly approach? But what I'm saying about PR is you better learn the method, because approaching a producer on TV is different from approaching an assignment desk editor or a newspaper editor or the wire room at a newspaper. Most people don't even know what that is.
No, a lot of them don't.
But well, then they shouldn't. It's really not their field. But what I'm saying is you better master this too. You better know how to talk to that person out there. You better know how to sell your wares, so to speak, to that blogger without offending them. You know, otherwise it can be disastrous and it can backfire. Free sites and everything, wires and things, and everybody should utilize them if they can. It doesn't matter that there's a site that lets you get your message out. It matters what your message is.
Right. You know, a lot of them, you brought up a good point, and it comes down to strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell a lot of my clients, as I know you do as well, you know, make sure you have a strategy in place. And I see that too often in social media.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, I...
Because it's so spontaneous, right.
I know she knows how to use, you know, Facebook, so let her just pound away on that and set up
right.
a page. And then 3 months, they say, oh, this is garbage, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, send something out, you know, in a blog or something like that, and it backfire on them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it all just needs to be done with a strategy, whether it's a big upfront cost, whether it is cost effective, it doesn't matter. when you're communicating, you better have a strategy in place.
Right. Well, yeah, and it really, yeah. Like, it should be part of an overall PR plan. As you said, we don't charge any more for social media. You know, our clients have a very reasonable retainer every month, and for that, they get to pick what their priorities are. It's like a menu. And, you know, they get a lot of bang for their buck, and I'm sure we're not the only ones. I mean, I think PR firms in general deliver so much more than ad agencies, and I don't mean to hurt anybody's feelings out there, as for the money. I mean, advertising, it's wonderful. You can target your message exactly. You can control the message. You can control when it runs. But PR has so much more credibility, the third-party endorsement, and really, for the money, it's so much more efficient, and it has traditionally been that efficient in selling franchises or awarding them or whatever you want to call the process, attracting people to the business. You know, I think another thing I'm seeing now in social media, which I never, well, of course, would have seen, is, you know, profiling these franchisees and really getting to learn what's behind them, you know, in the brain, because 30 years ago we weren't that picky and there were no tools like that out there. So many times you get a good impression when the guy came to Discovery Day, okay, he wants this and I need the money and he likes our product. And boom, it was done. Well, that comes back to haunt you, too. It's like the same story I told about 20 years later on the study, right?
Right.
You know, he wasn't a match, or you know, they forgot to find out this, or they didn't really have the money that they thought they had. And, you know, it can be a nightmare. So now there's all kinds of tools. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of Franchise Navigator. That's a tool that profiles people. The same company has something, a social website called Franchise Central. I mean, so it's supposed to be a social media outlet for franchise community. So now we're getting into really specialized franchise stuff, and that's the thing. The franchise community is unique. Our message has to be a different message than, look, I used to give speeches at conventions all the time. My clients, you'd have me up there, and one of the things I'd always say is, why would I buy a pretzel stand if nobody's eating pretzels? And that pretty much sums it up. You know, that's what I used to say to clients when they'd say, well, we just want you to do development PR for us. We just want you to attract franchisees. And I said, it's an overall integral program, because if your franchisees aren't happy, it doesn't matter if I get you 200 leads off the cover of Entrepreneur. They're not going to validate you.
No.
So absolutely. You know what I mean, Paul.
Right, absolutely. Well, you mentioned about, you know, blogs.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you take blogs, which are a big part of social media,
mm-hmm.
and integrate blogs with a current PR program?
Well, if you're smart, if it were me, oh, it is me. if it were me, it is. I'll tell you what we do, and it's a pain in the butt, and I'm not going to lie to any of you out there. We literally have two or three people in here, that's all their job is social media. They are a social media division, and they search blogs all day long, and they become familiar with the topics and the subject. They get to know the person almost as if they were introduced to them. And then we build a database. Just like, and look, the databases of yesterday are gone. In other words, it's not like, oh, AP, Bob Smith runs that bureau. You know, many of these big outlets only have time for hard news now. But you must develop a blog list, just like you'd, I mean, if people are doing their own PR in-house even, if you think you have members of the media that are always going to be interested, like obviously Coca-Cola has, I mean, somebody at the Atlanta Constitution, that's all the reporter does is cover Coca-Cola. So if you want to take the time and do the research and find the bloggers that would be conducive to your subject or your product or your service, but beware is what I'm telling you. We're professionals. We know how to approach these people, and we learn how to approach them. And not everyone has the time to do that. If you offend one, remember, unlike a newspaper reporter, he's not going to write a blast on you the next day in the paper, is he?
No.
But a blogger might.
A blogger might. Absolutely.
That's what, and very likely can. You know, you never know. Is this a serial killer in his basement who's just passing his time? Or, you know, is it somebody that used to work at the New York Times that's doing this now, you know, in a professional manner? So, you know, you just have to really research it. That's all I can say. And the funny thing is, it's still the same tools that we used when I used a typewriter. And that is, you know, we at Bacon, there's all these lists, and, oh, here's this journalist. That doesn't mean anything. Anybody can get a name. You can Google a reporter's name. what does the person, what do they find interesting? What do they care about? What do they write about? What do they talk about on their radio show? Like you, I wouldn't call you and try to pitch something that wasn't a franchise to you. You know what I mean? So it's really learning about the person that's delivering that blog or that column in a newspaper or that radio show. Learn what they're looking for, and stay loyal to it and stay true to it. And how can what you're offering them, you know, benefit their listeners or their readers.
Right. So we talk about social media, we talk about, you know, blogging and stuff, and how this is all beginning or is working towards, you know, integrating with PR programs. What do you think, and you know, being in the business for 25 plus years, I don't know if you thought 25 years ago that we would be where we're at today.
Oh, my God.
Otherwise, you'd probably be a lot wealthier than you are right now if you had that type of foresight.
Hey, I'd be wealthier if that one guy, my financial advisor, hadn't just screwed me. I'm going to arbitration on that, but that's another show.
Okay. There you go. What would it look like 10, 20 years from now?
Well, it's so funny that you should say that because you're absolutely right. I am not, I don't know if I should be proud to admit this, but in 1983, I was standing in my office, even had an office then, and somebody came in with the mail, and in the mail is this teeny weeny, the size of maybe a little bigger than a matchbook. And it's a little tiny example, like a model of a new newspaper that was coming out, and it was USA Today. So that's how old I am. I was like, oh, this will never work. But anyway, the thing is, who knew then that that would become such an important part of the landscape of journalism in you know, in our country? What do I think it'll look like? I think despite what everybody's saying, oh, in 10 years there's going to be no more newspapers and stuff, I think it's going to be the same as anything else. In franchising, during this bad economy, we've had what we call a shakeout. I mean, this is my, like, fourth or fifth recession in franchising. All the other ones have been to our benefit. And this one, you know, not too many people can recover from. But what I'm saying is you'll have a shakeout. There'll be 25 to 30% of people that go under, unfortunately, like any other businesses. And it's because for one reason or another, they probably just couldn't keep up. They shouldn't have been franchising. There's not enough market share for them. Whatever. The same thing is going to happen in the media. You know, the outlets that aren't strong, newspapers that open real big, yes, the young people of today, that's not how they're getting their news. But there's going to be a portion of people that's the only way they want their news. Will that be there 20 years from now, the big Chicago Tribune unfolding on the train? Probably not. But some version of the Chicago Tribune, whether it's named that or not, some version of that will be here, in my opinion. I don't know if I'd always want to get my news off of some tweet, you know, retweet from CNN. I really want to go see it. You know, my daughter asked me the other day, she goes, Mom, if you get me a Kindle, can I get all my magazines on there? And I said, you can, but you don't want to. I mean,
right.
Ladies in the audience, do you want to read a Vogue magazine on a Kindle, or do you want to see the magnificent outfits and all the color? And it's something lovely about curling up with your magazine. Some people won't want a Kindle because they like the feel of books and the smell of them. Is the market going to be less? Of course, things are going to change, as they're changing now. But also, Paul, I'll have you know that I was around, well, if I was around for the little baby USA Today paper, you know I was around for the Internet. And I'll never forget going to a franchise update conference. Love those guys. They do a great job. Go way back with them before they had those conferences, Gary and Therese. But I'll never forget going to one of these things, and every guy in the room was going, oh, the Internet, that's the whole new way. We're going to sell so much. We don't need PR. We don't need anything anymore. The Internet. And you know what? I sat there going, who do you think drives these people to your site? And once they get there, how easy is it for them to just go, you know, stroll, sit around their desk at night, just scrolling through every one of these things, and, hey, maybe I'll ask for a packet. Yeah, I'm going to, oh, this looks good. I think, sure. How many of those deals do you think closed over these years?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is everything, the bright new shiny penny or whatever you want to call it, is not always, you know, the silver bullet that's going to get you to the end. It's a huge, huge preponderance of things that are going to get you to where you want to go, including you better have a great product or service out there. And you better have a nice system. You better treat your franchisees well. And, you know, they need to treat their employees well. This is what builds a company. This is how somebody like Tom's Shoes, not a franchise, has become so famous. Are you aware of the Tom Shoes story?
No, I'm not.
Tom Shoes is a young man. He gave up everything he owned. I mean, I guess he was, I can't remember, but he's like 35 years old. And he put all his money into these little shoes. They're not very glamorous. They're kind of like little flats, men or women. Look like Keds. Remember the old Keds?
Yes, absolutely.
But for every pair he sells, he gives a pair away to poor children in many other countries, Africa. I'm sure if you go to YouTube and look up Tom's Shoes, you will see a video of them fitting little children with no shoes.
Right. I do know who. Yeah. I do know.
Right. And his whole theory is his business model, excuse me, is the model he'd like to see in the future, which is for every single thing one of us sells, we give something back. I know that sounds corny and everything, but perhaps that is what's going to really change business and change the world. You know, you get a little something more out of it than just a dollar or $10. Maybe you get a nice feeling, too. And by the same token, maybe all this social media will change the way we have to treat employees or franchisees or, you know what I mean, or our customers for that matter.
Well, I think what's great about it is obviously you don't have the geographic boundaries of having to, you know, wait to, you know, to go to a conference to talk to people or interrupt them with a telephone call or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just been wonderful in social media, you know, meeting different people and sharing ideas and information with different people in franchising. But, you know, you brought up a good point, you know, when you brought up, you know, when the internet popped up. And that's what I like to stress to, you know, all the franchisors and executives and professionals that are out there is that, you know, just like you shouldn't have looked at the internet from strictly a cost factor, don't look at social media, don't look at, you know, new ways of PR and new ways of marketing and everything else, strictly from a cost standpoint, say, oh, I can do this and it's cheap, it's almost doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
But I think that's what turns around and bites you.
But isn't that so true on everything, Paul? If you try, it always, you know, I think it was Winston Churchill, I don't know, someone said, if you think this program is expensive, try ignorance or something. And you know, that's the thing. Isn't that always, everybody wants to try to save money? I do, too. I do, too, believe me. But
I'm a firm believer in saving and doing things cost-effectively. But don't look at something and think it's, as you said, the silver bullet, and I always call the Holy Grail, and think that, wow, this is new. I can do this and not spend a dime. I mean, investments, and that goes along with a strategy and a plan. It needs methodically as a process in everything that you do. You can't just do it off the cuff haphazardly just because it's this new silver bullet.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You have to enjoy it. See, you know, it's like anything else. If you rush into something and you really don't know how to use the tool and you misuse the tool, there's actually a greater consequence here than some other things. And in franchising, as you and I well know, Paul, there could be really great consequences with earnings claims and things like that, things accidentally said. You know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, and with the Internet, it's forever. It stays there forever.
Right.
Someone's going to pick it out down the road when they're doing their diligence in a lawsuit or whatever.
Right.
Say,
when my
my
good friend Nikki Sells, who's fabulous VP of Development for Tasty Delight, always has that expression, you just can't unring the bell, Rhonda. You know, and that's it. That's it exactly. Once it's done, it's done, so you better know what you're doing when you do it.
I'd say you put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Hey, let's just come out with all the cliches we've used for the last 30 years, and we'll tweet them to everybody.
I don't think we have enough time.
Not only that, they'll blow it. They'll like blackball us from.
Well, Rhonda, our time together has certainly flown by, and another segment of franchise today, regretfully, is coming to an end.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
Today, and I look forward to having you on in the future because I know we have a wealth of wisdom to share and a lot of good times to have together. So please give me your commitment you'll be on again in the future.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it tremendously, and I think this is a great success, your show, and I congratulate you.
Thank you. In the meantime, let's stay in touch. And for all that would
I'll tweet you, baby.
Right. I was just going to say, for all that would like to stay in touch with Rhonda, she's on Twitter, at SandersonPR. Remember, next week on Franchise Today, I'll have as my guest Scott Lair of the IFA. So be sure to tune in next Thursday at 12 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. So until then, this is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Thanks for listening, and please be safe.